WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for
not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Looking for usable news and information that helps you do your job? Tune in to In Depth with Francis Rose every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Francis explores the relationship between agencies and Congress by taking you to the hearing rooms on Capitol Hill and asking questions of federal decision makers and experts. You'll get a firsthand look at how Congress affects your agency's personnel, funding, and oversight. In Depth also looks at the relationship between agencies and contractors, companies that do billions of dollars of business with the federal government, talk about the work they're doing for agencies, the work they're bidding on, and the work they didn't get. And In Depth will help you be a better manager. Francis talks to authors, scholars, and managerial experts about managing projects, managing your workforce, and managing yourself. In Depth with Francis Rose, every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What's the buzz in the federal community? Chris Dorbeck knows it. Join Chris for his new show, The Dorbeck Insider, weekday afternoons 3 to 7 on Federal News Radio AM. Chris has the insights on who's coming and who's going, new memos, new contracts, fun and helpful ways for federal managers to improve agency productivity while meeting mission goals. The Dorbeck Insider, building federal community by connecting people. Weekday afternoons on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
There's a new show in town for the connected, curious, and innovative. Chris Dorbeck hosts the brand new Dorbeck Insider, weekdays from 3 to 7 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Only Chris has the energy and the Rolodex to bring you inside the decision-making that changes your workday. He challenges conventional wisdom by asking his high-profile guests about what worked and what didn't. The Dorbeck Insider is information sharing on the radio in the government 2.0 world. The Dorbeck Insider, weekday afternoons from 3 to 7 only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now. Are you on Facebook? Do you Twitter? So does Federal News Radio. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio Facebook group. For the latest in federal news and government contracting, visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest is Dan Gordon. Dan is the Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy at the Office of Management Budget. Good morning, Dan.
Roger, good morning.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. I'm looking forward to our discussion of, you know, OMB's procurement initiatives, management initiatives, and where you see the things going and what your key issues are. In particular, the Mythbusters campaign is you issued the memo last week with 10 misconceptions. I think it's a great piece of work, frankly. I've read the thing, studied it. I think it's the right tone to set. So we're going to talk about that. But first, another thing that I noticed that happened last week was the announcement that procurement dollars, the spend, has been reduced by about $15 billion. What is it? I think it's from $550 billion down to $535. That's right. I can do math. What do you attribute that to? Where were those savings? Where did they come from?
Roger, I do think it's important, and it's got people's attention. The short answer is I think the administration has really instilled a sense of fiscal responsibility across the board in the military, in the civilian agencies, with our large purchases, with our small purchases. We can go into as much detail as you and as your listeners may want to later on, but it's the result of buying less and buying smarter.
Well, when you talk about saving money and buying smarter, I think the Mythbusters campaign is right in tune with that. Tell us about that. What does that entail?
Let me tell you how it arose, because I think your listeners may find it interesting.
You're reading my mind. I was going to ask that question. You'd get ahead of me. Go ahead.
It actually grew out of the effort by my colleague Vivek Kundra's team, what we call eGov, to try to understand why so many of our government's large IT projects go off the rails. They end up going way over budget, they go behind schedule, and they just don't perform the way we thought they would. The more we listened to industry, to government officials, and government officials across the agencies, whether it was in the CIO shop or the contracting shop or the program shop, the more we listened, the more we heard people say, one key cause of the problems is that we didn't write the contract right. And we especially didn't say what our needs were. What we call, as you know, the requirements definition wasn't well done. We drilled down further. We asked more. We said, why is that? And what we heard again and again from industry was the government's tender documents, the solicitation, had a requirements definition that simply wasn't realistic. Sometimes, actually, it was too ambitious in terms of the schedule or the performance specs. Sometimes it was the opposite problem. We were buying technology that was out of date when we put the solicitation on the street. But the reason in both cases was the same. We weren't sitting with industry, listening to industry, learning from industry.
That makes common sense to me, Dan. When we talk about contracting, we're talking about a meeting of the minds, right? An understanding. And if there's a lack of understanding between the parties, that translates into increased cost in the performance days. It also translates into bid protests. And I've always believed, both having worked in the government and also in industry as well, that, communication is the key to actually good contract performance, and also, you know, reducing the risk of protest. You know, I know one of the 10 misconceptions deals with protest. Can you touch on that one a little bit?
Absolutely. As you know, Roger, I had a lot to do with protests in my career, especially several years ago when I was at GAO. The fact is that protests are important. Protests provide transparency. They provide accountability. But what sometimes happens is people overlearn the lessons. We have a handful of protests each year, for example, about the question of whether an agency conducted meaningful discussions where GAO expresses concern. Again, you're talking about a handful of cases where GAO says the discussions weren't meaningful. And we have this overreaction by some people who say, oh, we shouldn't conduct discussions at all because there's a risk of protest. That doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. And I think that also leads to another great observation in the memo that, you know, the idea of awarding initial proposals has its place in the procurement process. But I think rightly the memo points out that, hey, look, you know, in negotiations and planning for those negotiations in the acquisition cycle is a key to getting a good deal for the government. And actually, it's a key, frankly, for the whoever ends up being the contractor to ensure, again, that meeting of minds and that you have good contract performance.
Absolutely. Our contracting staff, our senior acquisition professionals, can negotiate on the government's behalf. They can get us money. They can get us better prices, better performance. But if we tie their hands by saying, don't have discussions, make award based on initial proposals, we're not getting the benefit of those people's skills as business advisors. We're leaving money on the table. We are losing the opportunity to get better business solutions than what we're getting.
And I think part of the one of the keys to that is when you talk about communication with industry, that's also, you know, I just remember working in the government is that, you know, those acquisition professionals have to communicate with their internal stakeholders and putting together that schedule and explaining to them here exactly what steps we need to go through to get the result that you are actually seeking. So what role, in terms of the communication and the training are you going to be doing with regard to the Mythbusters campaign? For government folks, and also it may be for industry.
Our memo that we issued recently is really only the first step. We view this as a multi-step, multifaceted campaign. It's really trying to change the culture. That means working with the government. It means working with industry. Within our government agencies, it means working with the contracting shops. It means working with other people involved in IT. And program management, we need to reach across the board. By the way, I should tell you, part of our listening effort before we drafted the memo involved meeting with procurement lawyers from the agencies. I met with procurement lawyers from a series of agencies, many of them I know from my prior days at GAO in this area, and I was very pleasantly surprised. They were very supportive of more communication between their agencies and industry. I think that, in fact, what you're hearing is a broad consensus that says we in the government will benefit from more communication with industry.
And we do have to take a break in a moment, but I just want to pick up on that, Dan. I think that those procurement lawyers, I think, are going to be the key to your success in this effort. I mean, both in terms of, you know, working with their clients, and also as a tool to educating, you know, contracting officers and what's appropriate, what they can and can't do, and the flexibility that's inherent in the FAR. But right now we have to take a break. When we return, we'll be talking some more to Dan Gordon about the Mythbusters campaign, some of OMB's other initiatives. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Almost 70 years ago, a well-known Connecticut native named Homer Cummings had a dream to start a Washington law firm devoted to working at the intersection of America's business and government. As Attorney General for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he was an integral part of the New Deal. In 1956, Gilbert A. Cuneo joined Cummings' firm to begin what was quickly to become the largest and most successful government contract practice in the country, earning him the title the Godfather of Government Contracts. That same firm, McKenna, Long & Aldridge, today is recognized by Chambers USA as a Tier 1 government contract law firm. continuing its preeminence in the field through its offices in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, Denver, and San Diego. With the oldest and largest government contracts practice in the United States, McKenna, Long & Aldridge still operates at the intersection of business and government. They produce solutions by working with their clients on creative and flexible strategies that ensure success. Their attorneys and professionals include former members of government, Congress, and its committees, so they know how Congress thinks and they understand how Washington works. There is no aspect of government contracts with which they are not familiar. In this uncertain economic climate, clients trust them to deliver solutions at costs that represent real value. From one new deal to another, they have remained at the forefront of government contracting. McKenna, Long & Aldridge, a name you can trust.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Dan Gordon, Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy at OMB. We've been talking about the Mythbusters campaign, and I want to pick up back up on that just a little bit more, Dan. The very first misconception is the issue of, you can't meet one-on-one with contractors in that sort of pre-planning stage, requirements development stage of an acquisition. You rightly shoot that down in giving folks the facts. Can you elaborate a little bit on why you raised that one and what it means?
Absolutely, Roger. This is actually one of the ones we heard most often. People on the government side are afraid that they're going to get in trouble if they meet one-on-one with vendors. They think that it's prohibited. It is absolutely not prohibited. I'll tell you more broadly that I think that people sometimes think that if government officials meet with a vendor one-on-one, that somehow gives that vendor an unfair advantage in the competition. Not true. Obviously, we need to treat the vendors fairly. We can't give one company an unfair competitive advantage. But frankly, we sometimes run into situations where we have used a particular vendor as a contractor for years, and we don't realize that actually there may be alternative approaches. There may be ways to write the solicitation so that we can increase competition, get more competition, and get lower prices, new technology. Talking to vendors one-on-one can be a great way to increase competition and help the taxpayers.
I think that approach empowers the contracting officer to make better business decisions on behalf of the taxpayer.
We really see this as an effort to strengthen the role of our contracting officers and contracting staff.
Well, this initiative, it's a great thing, and one of the aspects of it that you pointed out is that, hey, there's a lot of flexibility in the FAR. I think as part of that, you make sure people understand that. I know you're working on training and acquisition workforce. Can you talk about some of your initiatives in that area?
I can, but I really want to step back for a moment and put things in context. The fact is that for something like 15 years, we fail to invest in our contracting workforce and our acquisition workforce more broadly. We didn't have enough people to do the work. And then beginning in 2001, we started dramatically increasing the spending on contracting. That combination of not enough people to do the work and a dramatic increase in the quantity of work was really, really damaging. We ended up with too many shortcuts being taken, not enough competition taking place. So this administration has been committed not only to fiscal responsibility in terms of restraining spending, but also strengthening the acquisition workforce, being sure that we have enough contracting officers, technical representatives, the famous COTRs or COTRs, that we had enough training for our contracting staff. We have made significant progress, both with the contracting staff themselves, the 1102s, and in the other parts of the acquisition workforce, most notably the COTRs.
Yeah, you're right on in terms of your description. I think the mid-90s and late 90s, the idea was reduce the workforce and streamline the process so you could do less with more. But then you had 9/11, Afghanistan, Iraq, even Hurricane Katrina, and the stresses that were placed on the acquisition workforce, and the amount of the volume that they had to buy, in the tempo of how they had to buy it, there just wasn't enough folks there to do it efficiently and effectively. So investment, I think this type of investment will pay off in the long run for the taxpayer. Before we started, you mentioned a new initiative that you're looking to launch. It's called can you give me the name of this again? It's
the Frontline Forum.
Frontline Forum. There's a PBS show, Frontline, I think, but I know this is not that. But please.
No, this is different.
Yeah,
we revived an idea that Steve Kelman had started in the 1990s called the Frontline Forum. I really liked the idea as soon as I heard about it. Actually, before I was confirmed, I did some preparation in terms of listening to people. And when Steve Kelman told me about this idea, I said to myself, we need to have that. So shortly after I came on board, we sent out the message to agencies. We invited all of the agencies to send us two people. They can send one, but up to two people. And we started meeting. We now meet every 3 months. We just had the fourth session a couple of weeks ago. It is about three dozen people. The focus is on contracting officers. We really want to have the front line there. We bring them into the White House complex, and we spend essentially a day with them from 9 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon, listening, talking about issues. We, from the point of view of our office, the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, we prepare an agenda of a couple of topics working with them, but we always give them time. If they want to raise other issues, we give them time to raise other issues. It's not a matter of us talking at them. It's a matter of getting their views. How do our initiatives, how do our ideas look from their point of view? We want to hear what the front line has to say about these ideas.
That's a great way to figure out how to fix certain problems. There's no, the acquisition professional, the contracting officer on the front line knows where, the issues are and the challenges they face, and frankly, can give you great suggestions on how to fix those.
They often have really good ideas. I mean, when we talked a couple of meetings ago, for example, about ways to move procurements faster, they talked about their experience with electronic reverse auctions. Now, it's true, we'd already been talking about it, but hearing it from a frontline forum person say, we've used electronic reverse auctions and it's really helped, made a difference for the other people to listen and learn.
And I think another aspect of listening to you describe this, another aspect of it that can't be underestimated is what it does for the esprit de corps of the contracting officers. If these folks go back to their agencies and they've had senior management at OMB in the White House listening to their concerns and their issues, I can't think of a better approach to try to raise raise the esprit de corps of the workforce.
This is an administration that is committed to the federal workforce. We want to be sure that they have the support that they need, the training that they need, so that they can serve the taxpayers. And I will tell you, I view the commitment to the acquisition workforce as one of my very highest priorities.
On that note, we have to take a break. But when we return, we'll be talking to Dan Gordon, Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy at OMB. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What do successful small, medium, and large federal contractors, including two-thirds of the top 100, have in common? Membership in the Coalition for Government Procurement. Successful federal contractors know they get the information edge they need on developing acquisition trends and an effective voice to protect their interests from coalition membership. For nearly 30 years, the Coalition's been the trusted voice of industry, working with federal officials to promote common-sense procurement. Know what the best know. Join the Coalition today to protect and grow your company's business. Contact the Coalition at 202-331-0975 or visit their website at thecgp.org. That's 202-331-0975 or thecgp.org. Don't be left wondering what will happen to your federal business. Contact the Coalition today.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Dan Gordon, Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy at OMB, and we've been talking about a series of OMB initiatives to improve the acquisition system. I know one of your key initiatives is strategic sourcing and getting essentially that's all part of the whole idea to buy better, smarter, more effectively for agencies and for the taxpayer. Tell us a little bit about your strategic sourcing initiatives.
Absolutely, Roger. It is a very important effort that we're undertaking, but this is clearly one where you can see how much we're working across the executive branch. Because in many ways, GSA is the lead in strategic sourcing, but we're working very closely with them and with the buying agencies. We are building on successes that we've already had before I came on board. There was progress in this area, for example, in overnight delivery. But the signature effort over the last few months involves office supplies. And it's particularly interesting, even though, frankly, people might say office supplies, that's so mundane. The fact is, the federal government spends more than $1 billion a year on office supplies. And the way we buy is pretty darn shocking. We have dozens and dozens, if not hundreds and hundreds, of separate contracts by separate agencies, separate components of agencies, paying all different prices, because our face to industry has been as if we were dozens of medium-sized customers. We're not. We're the world's largest customer. So what GSA put together with support from us and help from the buying agencies was a suite of blanket purchase agreements, BPAs, in which we did...
Those are off the GSA schedules, right?
They're from the GSA schedule. GSA ran a competition, including, by the way, a kind of reverse auction within that competition. And they got good prices, good terms. They are responsive to the needs of the buying agencies. That was the key. We listened with GSA in the lead to industry. GSA listened to the buying agencies. And what you have now is a vehicle that every federal agency can use. No more BPA unique to one agency. Every federal employee can use. And not only that, you get the discounts automatically. When you pay with your government purchase card, automatically get the discounts. And the beauty of this, although I could go on and on, but the beauty of this is that this effort demonstrates that it's not choosing between small businesses and better prices. Because of the 15 companies that won and got BPAs, 13 of the 15 are actually small businesses. Two of them are small businesses owned by service-disabled vets. This is a success for our small businesses. More than 60% of the dollars running through these so far are going to those small businesses.
That is a good story. Are you targeting any other areas for strategic sourcing, or are there any other plans in the works?
Absolutely. GSA is working with other agencies to look at least three areas. Multifunction devices, those are what people like me that are a little bit more old-fashioned tend to call printers. Software licenses.
I'm with you on that, Dan. I'm with you on that. I would call them printers, too.
software licenses, where, again, we often have dozens of contracts with the very same vendor at all different prices, and wireless plans. Each one of those commodities is in a different posture, but for all of them, GSA is taking the lead and working with the vendors, working with the agencies to find out ways to buy smarter.
Yeah, I think, and just as a little plug, I guess I'll have to say, is that Steve Kemp, the commissioner for